Blog Talk Radio.
And tonight is Tuesday, August 8th, 2017. And the call-in number is 347-857-3293. And if you want to call in and just listen, that's fine. If you want to call in and you want to be recognized as a speaker, when we see your number on the screen, we will text you a message asking you if you wish to do so. And you merely have to respond yes, and we will open your mic. I want to remind you that when we open the mic, even if you cough, we can hear it. If you tap a pencil, we can hear it. So we might have to mute you until it's your time to speak. And this evening, we want to remind you that you should be in Chicago this weekend, because this weekend, Black is back in Chicago at Chicago State University, August 12th and August 13th. We're going to be in the library at Chicago State University, and we hope you will be there. We will be discussing community control of education. We will be discussing community control of the police. We will be discussing the necessary participation of all people of goodwill in a revolution against capitalism. And if you Google Black is Back, you will learn more about the conference. Even if you can't be there, it will be live stream. And our brother and our faithful participant, Ralph Pointer, will be presenting. Without further ado, we're going to give you the message that we will be referring to from time to time. Reviewing history is the theme tonight. Maybe this time we'll get it right. The Statue of Liberty, what was it really about? Immigration, what's the true history? The Civil War and its aftermath. Our theory is that most people don't have a clue. And so tonight, our participants will be discussing their activities and what they've been up to, today's events from their perspective, and from time to time, we will be referring back to these things. But without further ado, and because we have some interesting call-in visitors this evening, we're going to open up our mic to Brother Ralph, and we're going to ask Ralph Pointer what's happening.
Well, thank you, Sister Betty. Ralph here. And as we said, we're going to be discussing relevant issues. And we begin with sisters and brothers. When I say sisters and brothers, who am I talking about? I'm talking about those people who are involved in creating a world that is better for everyone in it. In a unity of purpose, and that purpose is to create a more just and more equal world. But before I get into that, what I believe, the overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and chiros who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time.
Okay, see you later. Hope all is well. Bye-bye.
All right, I hear conversation on the line, another technical difficulty, but let us begin with history. What is the Statue of Liberty all about? Maybe this time we'll get it right. Now we see the president, the president's men, and reporters are debating what the Statue of Liberty means. Well, I would like to suggest that those who do not understand the origins of the Statue of Liberty to pay attention. It was developed by a Frenchman, the Statue of Liberty, and it was developed to show the relationship between the French Revolution and the end of slavery in America. And much of the design is in the basement of the Statue of Liberty. It was meant to show a change from slavery to anti-slavery to the dissolution of slavery, as there was a dissolution of the European system that existed in France at the time. Liberation is the issue. But nobody talks about that. But it is difficult for those to challenge the president, President Trump, and his men without going to the source. Have you heard on the media that it was a black woman representing the release or the breaking of the chains? Where are these artifacts? They're in the basement of the Statue of Liberty. And let us go on to the other subject that needs to be revised in history. The Civil War itself and what happened after the Civil War. After the Civil War, we had a few years of Reconstruction where the ex-slaves were given their rights. And in that period where the ex-slaves were given their rights, were the most progressive nation.
Okay,
this
Brother Ralph, we've lost you.
We've lost?
Brother Ralph, we've lost you.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening. Wow.
Okay, then you have to speak up. We can't hear anything.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Now I'm going to... Did you hear anything?
Yes, we did.
All right.
You were...
I heard
the
somebody
issue,
else talking while I was talking.
It wasn't on
continue.
My end.
Okay, I could hear
it. Not...
Okay, let me continue. We're talking about history. We're talking about the history of the Statue of Liberty. It is much in the news today. The Statue of Liberty and what...
slave woman whose chains liberated us, whose chains are in the base of the Statue of Liberty.
Yes. No, it is a representative of the end of slavery. It was a representation by a French artist to show liberty, equality, fraternity, along with the liberation of the slaves in America. But when it got to America and the statue was put up, they put the chains and the everything that was related to that and everything that was related to people of color in the basement. People don't know about it. Go look at it. So it is difficult to challenge any issue in America without looking into the issue of color, the double standard. This is just one of the situations. The second situation, we were talking about the end of the Civil War, what happened there, the so-called freeing of the slaves. And we talk about the Reconstruction period, where the most progressive of issues was dealt with by the ex-slaves, including public education. And it has not been dealt with in a fashion that they dealt with since then. And then we talk about the end, the so-called the end of Reconstruction. Well, it was slavery all over again. And much of it existed up until 1965 with the Freedom Democratic Movement in the South, where they were fighting for the right to vote. If slavery's over, then people have the right to vote. Answer, no, they do not. And so with every situation dealing with the history of America, let us revisit it, not only for Trump, but for the rest of us. And what was the other issue that you had mentioned that we were going to discuss this evening?
The Civil War and its aftermath.
The aftermath was we went right back to the slavery, because what happened?
History.
We'll get to immigration in a minute. What happened after slavery, the defeated Confederate soldiers were allowed to keep their weapons. Now, there were formulas for it, three-fifths of their weapons, whatever. They went back to their destroyed country. They destroyed southern half of the country with weapons, and they created slavery all over again. And it lasted with the force of guns. The ex-slaves were forced to continue with their slavery with the force of guns. Gunpowder, gun power, Mao Zedong, power explodes through the barrel of a gun. And now we bring ourselves to immigration. What is the history of immigration in America? And I would like to remind people that our dear sister Betty, as a college student, went out to the UN in New York City fighting to turn the triangle around. And the triangle I refer to is the base of the triangle, the base of immigration, was Europeans being allowed to come to America. While students and people fought in the early 60s to change that around. And so now it was turned around that Orientals will be able to come into the country, and that's a whole other story. And where did the Orientals come? What was the theory behind that? They came to the island because they felt that they could get cheaper labor than slave labor. It's a whole history. They brought people from India, people from China to do the labor, and that history is an interesting history, but it shows the perfidy of America in that America wants to have white immigrants, and anybody who says anything different is a fool, a liar, and the truth is not in them. But we can all look that up. And so all of these issues, is Lynch, in the words of Sister Lynn Stewart, capitalism is about cheap labor, slavery, immigrant labor, etc. But they're trying to make the immigrant the enemy. But an interesting thing, as we have a farm in the North Country right on the Canadian border, and the other day I was reading a newspaper where they're looking for laborers to harvest the potatoes. It was never a problem before. But I remember years ago when all of the immigrant field hands working to produce the spinach and all of the crops of the North Country, the immigrants go to Walmart. And one Friday evening, they went into Walmart, and there was ICE there to arrest everybody. And the following Monday, the farmers who depended on the migrant labor, the immigrant labor, was making a call to work for them in their fields. Americans are not interested in working in the field to feed themselves. The immigrant labor is a very important part of the American economic system. Immigrants pay taxes, but they can't get the benefits of the taxes that they pay. They do not have the benefits as illegal immigrants to receive the benefits that the owners and the employees keep for themselves to turn in, not for themselves, but to pay for their Social Security. And so it benefits every American, the immigrants who are illegal, because they work and the taxes, the withholding taxes go into the government if the employers are honest. And, of course, we have to understand many employers are not honest. But all of these questions must be redistricted with an eye to the truth, which we have not been able to access. And so, with that said, I will turn it back to Sister Betty Davis.
All right, that was Brother Ralph, and that was a mouthful, and that covered, believe it or not, many of the issues we were discussing tonight. I want to quickly put my input here. I try not to do that because there's so many people online, but before we go to Brother Larry Pinkney and then Brother Matt Turner, I want to say that in New York City, I want to just address the issue of the aftermath of the Civil War. In New York City, it is one of the most segregated states in America, and it's a consequence of institutional racism. In addition to that, there is a trend in New York City. It's called a waning of the black population. We call it ethnic cleansing, but the professors call it a waning of the black population, especially in the area dominated by the black upper middle class. It's a hollowing out of the black middle class in New York City. And for those of you who pay attention to the Black Agenda Report, you know that this is due to the increasing price of housing, especially the black middle class. The black middle class was targeted by the banks for these bogus subprime loans. And as a consequence, their houses went into foreclosure. And this precipitated a downward slide in every aspect of their lives. Another consequence of the caste system, which was a consequence of the so-called end of slavery and the institution of the new slavery, was that the physical health of black New Yorkers is horrific. The death rate for black residents in this city is nearly 40, that's 40% higher than whites. That death rate for our infant mortality rate is 3 times that of whites. In the community where I was raised in New York City, and I'm referring to the projects, the infant mortality rate is 70%. Anybody with any kind of intelligence would know that's genocide. However, our black misleadership class continues to vote for the Democratic Party, which was able, under Barack, to do something about the subprime loans, because the only wealth you can pass on to the next generation, if you don't have investment wealth, which we don't, is property wealth. He made sure of that. The Black Agenda Report called it the highest transference of wealth from one population group to another in the history of the world. I will stop here because many of our people are on the line, and I apologize to you for taking so much time. Brother Larry Pinckney is in the house, and Brother Larry Pinckney has his boots on the ground. He has been organizing in his community, as we all better do if we're going to survive.
Yep.
In addition to that, he has been sending out some very interesting emails regarding fake news from a global research, which he might want to share with us with regard to all this stupid propaganda about Russia. Brother Larry Pinckney, Black Panther, former political prisoner, jailhouse lawyer, your mic is open.
Where's Larry?
Move on.
Brother Larry? All right, then we're going to move on.
Can you
and
hear
we're going
me?
To go.
Oh, now we can hear him.
We can hear
you,
Brother Larry.
We can hear you now.
Okay. We can.
Sorry. Well, I just went to first and foremost say thank you very, very much for what you have to say, Sister Professor Betty Davis. What you have to say is very important, no matter how much time it takes up. It is extremely important to hear your analysis and what you have to say. And thank you, brother, colleague, comrade, Ralph Pointer. I'm looking forward to hearing from everyone, Brother Nat Turner, Sister Ann Lamb, Tariq, Joel, you name it. Want to hear from everybody, and we'll be listening. Let me say this right off the bat, that, you know, Brother Ralph, you were mentioning the Statue of so-called Liberty, and I put those words in quotation marks, that actually came from the nation of France. Let us remember that France and the United States are the most oppressive powers of the nation state of Haiti, right to this very day, because the resilient Haitian people had the unmitigated audacity to stand up and to fight. And right to this very day in the 21st century, they are still trying to, by they, both the U.S. and France, are trying to destroy the resilient people of Haiti. Let's be clear about that. So when I look at the Statue of Liberty, I see one word. It's called hypocrisy, not liberty, not democracy, but hypocrisy. The other thing I want to mention, Sister Professor Betty Davis mentioned briefly what is happening in New York, New York City in particular, and the so-called gentrification, which is in fact ethnic cleansing and genocide, okay? But let's also remember, let me amend or add to that if I may, that it was none other than the Clintons, that is to say Bill and Hillary, or some people know her as Hillary Clinton, who have pushed this. If you go to Harlem today, it is not the Harlem of the Renaissance. Why? Because Bill Clinton and company and Hillary Clinton decided they were going to take it over to gentrify it, quote-unquote, to commit legal ethnic cleansing against the people of Harlem, but not just Harlem, but throughout New York. I was reading an interesting article today, and I apologize because I haven't forwarded it, but I will later tonight or early tomorrow, about the fact that in Brooklyn, there are a couple of streets named after Confederate generals. Well, my feelings are somewhat ambivalent about that. What I feel is that we need to concentrate on obtaining our human rights. I don't say civil rights, our human rights today. All right? And with that, I lead into we must free all of our political prisoners. All of our political prisoners. We are not even living as human beings unless or until we free our political prisoners, black, white, brown, red, and yellow. Our prisoners are languishing in these gulags. They are kept in a situation not only physically but psychologically. Believe me, I know what I'm talking about, been there. And so we must free our political prisoners. We can talk all we want about this and that, but you know what? Bottom line is, if we don't free our own who have fought for us, then what the heck are we doing? What are we really all about? Free our political prisoners right now. One more thing, and then I will get off the line, and I want to say this. I want to say that it, you know, we sometimes refer to quote-unquote capitalism, which this country doesn't even really have capitalism, so-called free enterprise. That's a joke. But one of the things that I was reading about or rereading is something that, and this may blow your mind, that Dr. King, Martin Luther King Jr. said, and I want to read it to you very briefly. He says, quote, capitalism does not permit an even flow of economic resources. With this system, a small privileged few are rich beyond conscience, and almost all others are doomed to be poor at some level. That's the way the system works. And since we know that the system will not change the rules, we are going to have to do what? He says we are going to have to change the system. So it's about systemic change, and that's a direct quote from what King had to say. I bet they won't play that on PBS or NBC or ABC or Fox News. I bet you won't find that quote. But anyway, all power to the people. Let's free our political prisoners. Sister Professor Betty mentioned organizing in the community. I don't want to take up a lot of time, so I'm just going to say yes. I am doing my utmost to organize in my own local community because, quite frankly, that's where it begins, where we are, where we live, where we reside.
Yep.
And we've got to get busy, just like our brothers and sisters confined in these gulags. That is their, quote-unquote, small community, but they have a much larger community out there, and that's us, and we need to do something about it to bring them home, bring them home. Let's get off of this nonsense about this Russiagate, because that's a distraction meant to keep us neutralized. Let's keep our eyes, as they used to say, on the prize. So with that, I'm going to end. Love you all. Looking forward to hearing from everyone. Love you. Free our political prisoners. All power to the people. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Larry. But we must remember, when we look at history, the beginning of the destruction of the community in Harlem, in New York City, began after Adam Clayton Powell had established a party in a Democratic Party that he controlled. And then when the Kennedys came against Adam Clayton Powell with their candidates of color, to oppose the power of Adam Clayton Powell, was the beginning of this destruction of black political power within the Democratic system. And the Democrats, those colonialists, won. And after Adam, we were all flunkies. As I say, first we were slaves, and now we follow the slaves that were appointed by the Democratic Party. I'm talking about Charlie Rangel, who was a congressman after Adam Clayton Powell. I'm talking about that whole system in Harlem of politicians that were subservient to the Nationals, which was racist, and they went along with it. So after Adam, there was no representation of the black interest in Harlem. Continues. Are you there?
Sister Betty?
Hello? I guess so. I will continue. Yes.
Hello?
Hello, I'm there. I'm here.
Did you call me? Hello?
Hello, what's going on?
Yeah. Did you call on me?
Oh, we have not Turner.
We can hear you. Call
we
on
can
me?
Hear you.
Are you still talking?
Okay, here
we can hear you.
So, if you can hear me, the piece I am doing is from... Hello?
Yes, Brother Matt, please proceed.
Okay. The piece I'm doing is a piece from a Palestinian poet by the name of Lina Talaf Tufaha, and it is entitled Running Orders. They call us now, before they drop the bombs. The phone rings, and someone who knows my first name calls and says in perfect Arabic, "This is David." And in my stupor of sonic booms and glass shattering symphonies still smashing around in my head, I think, do I know any Davids in Gaza? They call us now to say, you have 58 seconds from the end of this message. Your house is next. They think of it as some kind of wartime courtesy. It doesn't matter that there's nowhere to run. It means nothing that the borders are closed and your papers are worthless and mark you only for a life sentence in this prison by the sea. And the alleyways are narrow and there are more human lives packed one against the other more than any other place on earth. Just run. We aren't trying to kill you. It doesn't matter that you can't call us back and tell us the people we claim to want aren't in your house. That there's no one here except you and your children who are cheering for Argentina, sharing the last loaf of bread for this week, counting candles left in case the power goes out. It doesn't matter that you have children. You live in the wrong place, and now is your chance to run to nowhere. It doesn't matter that 58 seconds isn't long enough to find your wedding album or your son's favorite blanket or your daughter's almost completed college application or your shoes or to gather everyone in the house. It doesn't matter what you had planned. It doesn't matter who you are. Prove you're human. Prove you stand on two legs. Run!
Wow.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
All we can say is that poetry is the music of the mind, as Sister Wren used to say to us. We want to point out that Brother Matt is here representing the spirit of our warrior sister, Lynn Stewart. Without further ado, because we want to make sure we get everybody in and have time for Brother Ralph and Brother Larry to get back to us, Brother Joel, your mic is open, and Sister Ann will follow. Brother Joel, your mic is open.
Yes, can you hear me?
Loud and clear, much better this week, Joel.
Okay. Well, I listened to the discussion, and a lot of this centers around immigration. And I think we have to look at the big picture of what we're dealing with because, you know, they often boast that this is a nation of immigrants. But another way of looking at it is that it's a nation of invaders.
Yeah, for sure.
Because there are three major categories of people that live in this country. There are the native indigenous peoples. There are the voluntary immigrants. And there are those who were kidnapped into this country and maybe you could say forced immigrants or coerced immigrants. And that has to do with the enslaved population. And, of course, among some of the other immigrants, there is a middle ground because many of them were coerced by poverty or persecution in other parts of the world, but largely resulting from an invasion of the rest of the world by this nation of immigrant invaders. And I say nation of immigrant invaders because that's who's running the show. That's who coins all of these phrases and pits us against each other. When you start to think that the reason why people are coming to this country, a big reason is that their own countries have been imperialistically super oppressed and virtually destroyed, at least temporarily, and in some cases beyond recovery. For example, when the United States uses depleted uranium to fight against peoples in other countries that are resisting conquest and imperialist domination, that depleted uranium is in the soil forever. Mm-hmm. And it produces birth defects generation after generation, as well as shortened lives due to the effect of radiation being forced into the food of those people. but on a more general basis, country after country after country has been impoverished by those countries to which their wealth, or at least titles to their wealth, are brought. We're talking about countries like the United States, where resources and labor are stolen from around the world, and then the wealth is accumulated in this country so that it has even more of a commercial advantage over everyone else, and to impoverish everyone else, again, in order to coin its own so-called wealth. Now, on a world scale, this is being challenged to a degree with the rise of countries like China, to a certain extent, the other BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, and South Africa, but only to a certain extent, and not changing really the fundamentals of the relationship of the United States as the chieftain of world imperialism, stealing from the rest of the world at gunpoint, and then either recruiting immigrants to work as cheap labor in the United States, but not as cheap as in their own countries, which have been so totally impoverished, or to be used in a way to become a target where other people are told, wow, these other people are competing with you, but not seeing how these differential privileges are being used to divert the energy so that the process of unifying against the big major oppressors that try to set us all against each other, they become invisible as people look to they look sort of downward as where to direct their anger. People more oppressed, people lower on the totem pole, and that's the really the opposite of the kind of consciousness that has to be built, which is a consciousness of solidarity on a worldwide basis against those who exploit, oppress, and divide and conquer the world. And here, what are we referring to? We're referring to the giant banks and corporations and the dynamic of the, some people might say it's not real capitalism, it's imperialism, but it's a combination of those things. It means impoverishing many to enrich the very few and creating certain buffer zones in the center. Now, of course, the incentive is to scapegoat downwards, not upwards, because when you go up against the powers that be, they have ways of striking back, whereas they sometimes even reward you for scapegoating downward and building that kind of hatred for the most oppressed. So we have to look at it from the point of view of the remedy of all of this being human solidarity. But we have to look at ourselves as a human family, and when these horrible things are done to other people of the world, they're not other people of the world. They are our relatives. They are our family. And we have to stand together and bend those fingers into a fist and fight back and create a world which is based on our common humanity and in which the structures that enable all of this oppression, the unequal division of wealth in private hands, and this all has to be placed under democratic control, all of these resources that have been built up, because either they could be a huge benefit to humanity and overcome many of our material problems, or they become a weapon in the hands of those who are the greatest problem in the world, that is the exploiters and the oppressors, the imperialists. So we have to see immigration in that way, that this is all a product of first the invasion of what's called the United States, some would say the United Snakes, and then the turning of that inside out to oppress the rest of the world based on that same dynamic, which is genocidal land theft and racial slavery in the what's now increasingly called the homeland.
Well, Joel, that's a total analysis.
May I interject? Ralph, may I interject? I just really have to. I certainly concur with most of what Brother Joel has said. However, I want to repeat emphatically, the United States is not a nation of immigrants. We need to look up and distinguish the difference between the word migrant and the word immigrant. My grandmother on my mother's side, my late grandmother, was indigenous native. If anyone told her that she was an immigrant to the United States, she would rightfully and righteously spit in their faces. And
I do think that Joel covered that.
Wait a minute.
Let me interject. I do believe he covered that very thoroughly.
Well, I hope so, because I think this is a myth that we keep pushing. It's a myth. And black people who came over here in the halls of slavery did not immigrate.
He talked about that.
All right, I'm just emphasizing that.
Okay.
Both warrior brothers are correct. But at the same time, Brother Larry is correct to continue to emphasize
background.
How we feel about it. And we have to move on, guys, because I want to get back to
him. What is
and
the background
we have
noise?
An opportunity to speak to our political prisoners, because we have Sister Kolya, who is a longtime warrior from SNCC, and the struggle of human rights from the Deep South, who is on the line tonight. Sister Ann, your mic is open, and congratulations on your speech for the Move 9 this past Saturday, and we appreciate all you did to represent the political prisoners. Sister Ann, your mic is open.
I tried. I would like to read this nice, very good piece by Herman Bell, which goes back to a lot of what Larry Pinckney was saying earlier. And he just wrote this piece. He wrote it for Critical Resistance on August 1st. It's called On U.S. Political Prisoners. It's not very long, and it's very interesting. How do organizations work to support political prisoners and simultaneously work to abolish the prison industrial complex? First, it's crucial that people are educated on U.S. political prisoners and that PPs not be regarded as a label or a slogan or as a poster or category, but as passionate, caring human beings, devoted social activists imprisoned by the state to punish and silence them for their advocacy in the social justice struggle, including humane treatment of the earth, the environment, and all living things on the planet. These are people you know, some of whom you know personally, and who should be widely known and revered by freedom-loving people everywhere. They are not martyrs. They have no wish to be thought of as such. Their bodies bled in the streets, were frequently soaked by water cannons at demos, and as with others, desperately gasped for fresh air outside choking fogs of tear gas. Separated from wives, children, friends, and community, sentenced to unimaginable prison time and unrelenting suffering. Militant? Yes. Rational? Yes. staunch advocates for social justice? Yes. These are people you should want to know and support. And the greatest support you can give them is to demand their freedom or release on parole. Supporters may come to realize that they are seeing themselves in these PPs, and if seen in this regard, whatever is done to relieve their plight, to free them, becomes fixed in the social consciousness, and people draw strength and inspiration from that, from being part of something that is noble and good, especially from being part of the fight to rid the world of human suffering and deprivation. The writer Eduardo Galeano noted that the world, which is the private property of a few, suffers from amnesia. It is not an innocent amnesia. The owners, he went on to say, prefer not to remember that the world was born yearning to be a home for everyone. And so people have reason to resist the present social arrangement. With few exceptions, U.S. political prisoners are not well known or represented in U.S. society, and U.S. corporate media, as expected, totally ignores them except to report an obituary or legal setback like parole denial. This, on the one hand, is a continuation of state-controlled media to silence dissent and protests, and on the other, is an illustration of ineffective political prisoner education and support work for their release. Appeal for support and demand that political prisoners be released should always be in the forefront of any progressive public address rather than, as is typically the case, at the end, sometimes not at all, or as an afterthought in closing remarks. Though the prevailing social climate does offer hope. When dissidents outside the United States speak of political prisoners, their own and those in other countries, seldom, if ever, is anything said of U.S. political prisoners, and on the rare occasion when it is, it's so vaguely expressed as though to suggest it's of no significant concern. This especially speaks to ineffective domestic political prisoner education and organizing of support work. Political prisoner support work is an integral part of the social justice struggle against racism, poverty, discrimination, hunger, police violence, mass incarceration, prison warehousing, and crony capitalism. Thus, in calling for prison abolition and alternatives to incarceration, a coherent alternative model would help illustrate the use of skits, workshops, teach-ins, songs, art, and the like, so that people may see the sense of it for themselves. Suffering is not inevitable. Alternatives are possible. Show how prisons are human warehouses where people are numbered and commodified like products on the shelf in a supermarket with unlimited space for more. Expose how the capitalist system, the exploitation of man by man for profit, has failed to meet basic human needs. As Comrade George Jackson observes, the only way the exploiter can maintain his position is to create differences and maintain deformities. Show how diverted prison resources can be more productively used in education, job training, housing, health care, community programs, etc. Despite their power and beauty, words without deeds are useless. People have to demand change. Best in interests, including the courts, police, prisons, and all the local supply services whose livelihood depends on this arrangement, ain't going to roll over and play nice simply because a new, humane, and more efficient alternative to incarceration has been introduced. Vested interest has a way of protecting itself and will use any and every means to discredit and destroy this alternative use of vital resources and humane treatment. The fight for it reveals alternatives, exposes contradictions, and is therefore worthy to undertake. All power to the people and free all political prisoners. Herman Bell.
Right on.
Oh, thank you, Anne. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank
and
Herman.
I'm going to open up Mr. Collier's mic for a few moments before
yes,
we return.
Yes, Mr. Collier, right.
Well, hello, Betty, and everybody. Ralph, Betty, thank you so much for having this show. I missed you the other week, and I was so upset when I called and I didn't find you. But I wanted to say to everybody, it's really a wonderful experience to come here and to be brought up to date by people who have been out on the battlefield and know what's happening. Well, I know you have discussed sessions call for returning to mandatory sentencing. I know you've discussed that, and I know you've discussed war for sure, because we're on our road right back to 1865, going in another direction faster. And I wanted to say this, Brother Rath, most people don't know, that the South did not or win this battle alone. In 1875, to give you an example, at the place where I was born, the Dry Grove, Clinton, Mississippi, generally referred to as the Clinton, Mississippi riots, the Union Army, along with the Confederates of the South, moved in on well-armed black people, and we fought and fought. My granddaddy says we fought till his boots overflowed with blood. They won. They won. General U.S.L. Grant, who was president of the United States, was sent a cablegram by the governor, Ames of Mississippi, and he responded by saying he won't hear nothing else about it. Hear nothing else about no slaves and no issues.
Mm-hmm.
So Africans were left with few arms. Now, we had arms, but few. And we used those we had well, but we lost that battle. So we weren't put in slavery in the South again by the South. It was a scheme between the northern industrial capitalists, the northern politicals, and
that's
the
right.
Southerners.
That's
all
right. That's
had
right.
One, as they are now, as they move us back to slavery with the forfeiture
mm-hmm.
piece. Because every time, Derrick Bell is right. Derrick Bell, the legalist, is right. Every time this nation ever has an economic crisis, the African who came here as prisoners of war pay the price. Natives always pay
thank
the price because we own their land. Thank you.
Thank you,
well,
Sister
thank
Collier.
You. Thank
that
you
was
so
great.
Much for that, Sister Collier. But we have to remember, along with that, with every struggle of the workers in America, and last week I referred to a place in West Virginia where a large number of miners organized and fought the corporations. They brought in the government, the federal troops to suppress them. It's the same thing over and over and over again, and it's important that we speak it so that more people can understand that reality. It is not a small group. It is not a defeated Southern component that instituted slavery. It is not a corporation that forced the miners into subservience. It is always in collusion with the American federal government, and they back it up with troops. We could go over this 100 times. In every rebellion against injustice, it is American federal troops. Therefore, we must understand or re-examine our understanding or our attitude towards this so-called American government. I will relinquish the microphone. Back to Sister Betty.
Thank you, Brother Ralph. I just want to remind everybody, Queen Mother called this place a white settler nation, and we must
yep.
never forget that.
It is a white settler state.
White settler. So, 1111, your mic is open. If you wish to speak, now's the time.
No, I'm just listening. Thank you.
Oh, no, thank you. We appreciate that. We have one more. 8489. Your mic is open. Wish to speak. Your mic is open. Last four digits. 8489. If you wish to speak, your mic is open. All right. So,
well, I could
Ralph,
say something
Brother
very
Larry.
Quickly.
Yes, Sister.
I had something
Ann.
Very
yes.
quickly to say. Let us not forget that tomorrow is the Twitter storm to Governor Cuomo once again for Jalil Muntakim. You can go to freejalil.com.
Yes.
All the information is there. If you don't tweet, you may call the governor. You may write the governor. You may email the governor. You may copy the other group that's there that is supposedly looking at clemency. we are going to insist and persist on this. We've been doing it every 2 weeks. We're going to do it for the whole damn year. And if we find Cuomo anywhere, we are going to put the heat on him personally, okay? We
right.
want our brothers and sisters home now, not next year,
right.
not next century.
So you're
okay,
right. And let us say that our motto will be no longer will the Democrats or Republicans depend on the political slavery of people of good conscience. If we don't have our
political demands met for our political labor, we will go home for you, Cuomo, on the same way we went home on Hillary Clinton.
All right, Brother Joel. You want to chip in there? Brother Joel?
Well, he might be gone.
Brother Joel?
All righty, buddy. I think we have run out
Brother
of
Larry.
Time.
Brother Larry, your mic is open.
Yes.
Last words?
Just want to say all foul to the people. Free our political prisoners right now. Right now.
Yes.
All foul to the people.
All.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
No. Program.
I love this
so
song.
Much.
Thank you.
Black is back.
Yeah.
See everybody in Chicago this weekend.
See everybody.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains.